When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life. You're listening to the Gravity Commons Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Matt Tevi, joined as always by my friends, Christy and Ben. Good day to you both.
Hey.
Hi there.
We are fast approaching summer. My kids have like a week of school left. And yesterday, just yesterday, here in Indiana, I got my veggies into my garden. And I'm really excited,
ooh,
you guys.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yep.
What'd you plant?
It's a mix of, like, I have three tomato plants and then about a dozen or so pepper plants.
Ooh.
And I also planted some basil and some snap peas.
Okay. So you can make salsa out of some of it.
Oh, yeah. I've got some... I got some tomatoes that are perfect for salsa. Perfect.
You need to plant a little cilantro.
Oh.
You know, yeah, I do. You're right.
That's
pretty
easy.
It is easy. Yeah. All right. I'll put that on my list.
That's my tip for you.
Thanks for the pro tip, Christy. How are you doing?
I'm good. You know, May Madness is kind of what, you know, they call it March Madness, but it ain't March Madness. It's May Madness.
Not for mommies and daddies.
No. So there's a lot going on, but fun. Yeah. Most of it's really May fun. Madness. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I was watching the Pacers game the other night. You know, it's the NBA Finals, NBA playoffs kind of season. And one of my kids sat down next to me and looked at the basketball and was like, is this still March Madness? I was like, well.
Then I'm right, Ben.
No.
But I guess you could call it May Madness.
Those girls were all over it.
It's May.
Yep. It's like, well, no, this is a different. Anyway.
Well, Ben, do you have a pro tip for us? I gave Matt a pro tip.
About the garden. Yeah, I guess I don't have a, I don't, maybe my pro tip is when one of your kids asks a question that doesn't make a lot of sense, just take it in stride. Don't point out their mistake too harshly. So just explain to them the difference between college basketball and professional basketball.
That's good.
That's what I did. I was like, no, this is pro basketball.
I pick a word every year, and this year's word is pause. Mm-hmm. And like, what does it mean? Selah is like, you know, you see that a lot in scripture. And I have a necklace that has like the little pause symbol. And it's been this practice that when somebody's said something that's been like, ooh, I need to take a deep breath, or I need to not respond harshly or whatever, that I kind of like hold the necklace. And the other day I was doing that in a conversation with somebody, and one of my coworkers saw me and like later called me out. Like, I knew you were taking a breath because you were holding onto your necklace.
Nice.
I'm like, wow. Oh man. So I don't know, Ben, maybe you need a necklace, and then crazy questions come and you just hold that necklace.
Yeah, just hold the necklace. Yeah. I mean, thankfully, you know, it was a silly little thing. So
we had
a laugh. It was nice.
Yeah, that's good. Fun. Yeah. I do have like a practice tip that kind of maybe fits along with what we're about to hear, but somebody has kind of asked, like, how do you process grief? How do you process lament? And so I'm just going to share one of my practices that I do, but I take a piece of paper and I just set a timer. It's not even like a long timer. Maybe it's like 3 minutes because I think in some ways we have to get used to even knowing how to do this. I just write down all the things that are grieving my heart, like the things that have kind of percolated up to the surface. And I just like journal them out as fast as I can, as much as I can, edited version of my heart. And I'm not concerned that someone's going to read it. I'm just like writing it all out. And then I flip the page. Once the timer goes off, I flip the page over and I set the timer for like 1 minute. And I switch my pen from my dominant hand to my non-dominant hand. And then I just ask the question, like, God, what can you say to me in all of this? Or can you give me some encouragement of what would hope look like in the midst of all that I just wrote out? And often I write like one word or one sentence. And it takes a long time for me to write with my non-dominant hand. So it looks like a kindergartner. But there's something that happens in our brain chemistry when we switch hands, and with even within our emotions as we're trying to like articulate what's going on. And so often it's like on one side, all of this stuff that's kind of overwhelming and grievous. And then on the other side, like maybe a sentence of, I'm with you, or beloved, or you know, something like that, that then I can hold on to, that there's some truth that I can remind myself of throughout the day in the midst of my grief and in the midst of my lament. And so I just share that because I didn't share it on the podcast. And we're talking to Tara McDaniel today. And I just thought, oh, maybe I'll share that as like a little tidbit before we started.
Mm-hmm. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very practical. Today's podcast is very practical.
Yeah.
For you, listener. I think I've heard you share about this before, Christy, maybe not on the podcast. I can't remember, but I find that to be such a fascinating thing that, just sort of switching to your non-dominant hand, there's something really poignant, I think, and profound about that as like the way that the hand through which God will speak to me, right, is non-dominant. There's a bit of vulnerability in it. There's less control. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's something really beautiful about that, just as a symbol, but also, like you're saying, it maybe activates a part of our brain that needs to be activated to really hear God speak to us and sense God with us.
Yeah. I think it takes the reality that we are embodied creatures seriously, and then allows our body to be an instrument. Like our body matters, you know, an instrument through which revelation or communing with God happens. So it's awesome. Yeah. And does fit really well into this conversation we have with Tara today.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Let's dive into it.
Let's do it. After Matt takes one more sip of his coffee. I like Matt that you make sure, you're probably not thinking about this explicitly, but you made sure that we could hear you sipping your coffee.
I just want everybody to know. We're just gathered.
Listener, I hope that
it's so true.
Yeah. I hope that whets your appetite for this interview. And maybe who knows, maybe you gotta go get a cup of coffee now. So
yeah.
All right, should we dive in?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Tara McDaniel joins us today on the Gravity Leadership Podcast. She's a spiritual director for adults and kids and has spent 2 decades as a pastor and ministry leader, earning her MDiv at Portland Seminary. She wrote More Than Ordinary with Doug Sherman and is a regular contributor to the Compassionate Companioning Center blog. There it is. She lives with her husband in Austin, Texas, with her twin grandchildren nearby. And today she joins us to talk about her latest book, Hopeful Lament, Tending Our Grief Through Spiritual Practices. Tara, welcome to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to have you. This book was deeply personal for you. You introduce us right at the beginning with sort of how this book arose out of your life. You went through what you call sort of a Job season. I wonder, as a context for why this matters to you and how you found your way into it, if you could share a little bit about that season and how this book emerged from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I spent most of my adult life as a ministry leader, and before I get to the season of upheaval and disruption and loss, I'll say that I would have considered myself well equipped to handle grief and loss. I knew my Bible. I knew my theology. I had a perspective that I had a good handle on things. And then when life fell apart, and that included a death threat in my daughter's first semester of of college, it included business fraud and wow. Legal hassles and reputation being handled and businesses lost as a result of fraud that happened around the time of the financial crisis. It included an awakening to in a church that my family and I had helped start, an awakening to the ways that the leadership had become really toxic and even abusive in cases, and that kind of system was sort of hiding in plain sight. And then, you know, sort of the most dramatic, the one that's sort of it in a way easiest to talk about because it's so, it's uncomplicated in a way. We had a catastrophic house fire started by a visiting family member accidentally. And so you mentioned I live in Austin, Texas. It was August. It was a season of drought. And we lived at the time sort of at the edge of the hill country here in central Texas. And so our house was sort of situated on a hill. With, you know, sort of multi-level deck. It started at the bottom of the deck, and because of the drought, it had time, you know, and because of the location, it had time to become sort of this raging inferno by the time that we saw it. And so you hear those stories of all we could do was rush out the door, you know, grab every living thing and rush out the door. There was no time to grab, you know, a photograph or you know, that was our experience. And so, goodness. So on the other side of that, you know, I noticed who showed up. I noticed, people that I would have sworn would show up for me and my family that were then and remain to this day absent. And so I found myself exhausted, depressed, confused. My faith felt really ravaged at the end of, you know, kind of living through all of those things.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. What a tsunami of tragedy, right?
Yeah, it's a good word for it.
Yeah. And things
that's what it felt like.
Yeah. Things that, you know, I wonder, Tara, how did you make sense of this? I mean, you talk in your book about some unhelpful ways that we deal with pain and suffering. And one of the phrases you sort of bring into the foreground there is that, quote, everything happens for a reason. That sort of way, like, you know, somehow this is God's will. And he's going, like, he and the fire, you know, isn't out of sight of his providence. Can you help us understand what are some of the limitations or deficiencies of talking like that? How is that unhelpful for you?
Yeah. Yeah. We heard, you know, everything happens for a reason. Aren't you glad you have faith? You know, everything's going to be okay. God's going to work it for good. You know, boy, you're going to have such a testimony on the other side of this, you know, all these kinds of things. And, you know, I have to say that I believe most, if not all of the people saying those kinds of things, it meant us well, right? They intended to be offering comfort. And, you know, the reality is it did anything but. It felt, it made us feel unseen, unheard, But again, I think most of them were coming for a good from a good place. And there is a sense in much of the church, I think, and even in the broader culture, that is uncomfortable with loss, especially complex loss that is sort of thorny and has to be, processed over time. And there's a real sense that there's a real desire and a real sense that it's the right thing to do to return to positivity, to return to certainty, to tie things up with a tidy, neat and tidy bow. But the reality is that what those kinds of statements do is, they actually pour salt on open wounds, and invite people who are in pain and in loss to sort of fast forward through a process of grief in a way that isn't helpful and isn't authentic.
Yeah. Our society doesn't help us in that, right? Like,
yeah.
Some tragedy happens, somebody passes away, and you get like a day or two for the funeral. And grief is just, You can't put a time limit on grief and make it speed up or make it happen but you can create space for it, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so, grief isn't like a diet and exercise. Like, I can go to the gym and move weights around and only eat veggies and no Doritos and kind of force myself into this diet and exercise. But grief is like a ghost in some ways, where it's hard to get our hands around it, and even more difficult to schedule it in for many of us. And so I wonder if you could you give permission in your book to grieve. And so I wonder if you can speak for a bit to those of us who know we have things to lament, but have a hard time accessing it.
Yeah. Yes. That. Thank you for that question. That was my hope and intention in writing this book. I wrote the book that I sort of wish I had had 15 years ago.
Sure.
And that idea of giving permission, like, anyone who is listening to this and has things to mourn, know that God has room for your sadness, for your anger, for your confusion, for your hard questions. And can we just start by saying that once you start looking for that in the biblical narrative, it is there in our spiritual mothers and fathers. The hard questions are there in the Psalms, in the prophets, in the Old and New Testament, in the life of Jesus. Mm-hmm. The room for hard questions, the room for wailing aloud, for tearing our garments and smearing on dust, which are all ways that I will say, frankly, in the past, I felt very uncomfortable with those ideas. But what they do is those kinds of practices, which are lament practices, right, are a way of making room for the internal reality. It's a way of expressing and articulating through words and through actions an internal reality of brokenness, and sometimes an external reality of brokenness. And they're a way of inviting God into that, of saying, God, do you see? Do you see? Can you hold this with me? Can you help me through this to the other side?
We'll be right back.
Ben, you know what I love?
What?
My wife. My wife. But I also love theology and beer, and that's why we're excited to talk about Theology Beer Camp 2024.
Yes. Yes, it is a conference. It's a gathering in Denver, Colorado, October 17th through 19th that we got invited to participate in as a podcast. There's a whole bunch of podcasts that are going to be there. It's put on by Trip Fuller and Homebrewed Christianity. And it's going to be a great gathering,
Matt. Yeah.
We're going to hear from Ilya Delio. We're going to hear from Brian McLaren.
Tom Ward.
Butler Bass.
Yep.
Tom Ord, Brian Zond, lots of other folks. So yeah, we're excited to gather with you all.
We wanted to find some time to get together, and we're really happy to be invited into this, and we can invite you to join us here, because I know many of you listen to our podcast, but you listen to lots of others as well, and there's, I don't know, 30 or 40 podcasts are going to be there, probably many that you already listen to, some you don't, but you'll be introduced to. So if you go to gravitycommons.com/theologycamp and enter the code GravityHobbit, you get $25 off. What a bargain.
Incredible bargain. I hope to see you there. Again, it's October 17 through 19 in Denver, Colorado. gravitycommons.com/theologycamp and use the code GravityHobbit to get $25 off tickets.
Yep, join us. This month's online learning community is on reconstructing the gospel of Jesus. We're talking about how his gospel of participation, how he participates in our humanity, and then we get to participate in the divinity of Christ and God and the Godhead himself. This is an ongoing series that we've done every fourth Wednesday. This month, it's on June 26th. If you go to the URL gravitycommons.com/reconstructing, you can sign up for a premium membership of our Commons community and get access to all the past classes we've done, all the past learning communities, or you can buy this just as a one-off, pay what you can, pay what you want to come and join us. Even if you can't join live, you'll get a recording. This class has been incredible. We've been reconstructing what is the gospel that Jesus proclaimed, and this is the penultimate. That's one of Ben's favorite words. This is the penultimate learning community. So join us for this. I'm very excited. Ben and I will be in Louisville for this learning community. So we may even be on the same screen hanging out.
Who knows? Yeah. Yeah. You'll know that we're both real people at that point. So not AI. This sense of your imagination.
This learning community is actually coming out of what we've heard listener feedback about how the Gravity Commons podcast has been so encouraging, and people want more theology, more Bible stuff, and to dive deeper in reconstructing a livable faith. Yeah. So this learning community is all about reconstructing a faith that is worth believing, worth living in 21st century. So join us Wednesday night, June 26th, 8 p.m. Eastern, for this learning community.
Yep. Again, you can go to gravitycommons.com/reconstructing to find the two different ways that you can register there. And this is like a big Zoom call, essentially. There's some teaching, but then there's a lot of time for Q&A for people to post things either in the chat or to unmute themselves. And so it's a really fun way to see faces and have some community around learning. That's why we call it a learning community.
Yeah. So let's learn together. Let's get back to the show.
In chapter one, you make use of Resma Monachem's distinction between clean pain and dirty pain, which he talks about in, I know he talks about that in My Grandmother's Hands, which I've read. Yes. And I've been helped by that, because I think I used to be, I don't know, I guess there's an intuition that I and others have had that it's like not all sort of expressions of pain or outbursts of, you know what I mean? Like the pain doesn't always come out clean. Like it doesn't always come out helpfully. And I think because sometimes people are afraid of that, they don't lament. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's like, so this distinction has been so helpful for me. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what you mean by that distinction and why it's been helpful for you.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So I am so helped by his distinction between clean and dirty pain. Another sort of phrase from Menachem that I find so helpful is he talks about grief as a way to metabolize pain. That's such a helpful image for me. And what you're speaking to is, I mean, we've all seen grief and pain. We're very familiar with toxic ways that it can be expressed. That's go on social media. It's there all the time, right? It's present in mass shootings, things like that, where this raw pain comes out in violently destructive ways. It's present in various addictions, grief and pain is sort of weaponized against the person's own being, right? And so those are ways that those would be all examples of dirty pain, right? Clean pain, what Resma means by it, and similarly what I mean by it, and I believe what God means by it, if I can be so bold, is clean pain is the pain that says, this hurts. It's the courage to make room for our grief. And Christy, as you said, it shows up in inconvenient ways. And there's a real invitation for us to cultivate more capacity for spending time. You know, there's a great children's book called When Sadness Is at Your Door. And it pictures sadness as this sort of big blue blob that sort of is following this child around. And the book talks about ask your grief what it wants. Sometimes it wants to take a walk outside. Sometimes it wants a cup of hot chocolate. You know, and I think, you know, for us as adults, we can cultivate a capacity to be less afraid of grief. And to make room for it, and to cultivate practices, I mention a lot of them in the book. They're present in our cultural history, and in every culture in the world has lament practices. So cultivating some practices that can help us externalize the grief in ways that aren't leading to more violence toward ourselves or others.
Yeah. This moving towards our grief and asking what it wants feels transgressive, I think, to many Christians. Not only because maybe we're scared that the grief will overtake us and consume us, but also there's this latent kind of expectation, Tara, that if I'm a good Christian or a victorious Christian, then I shouldn't feel like this. I wonder if you can, I do want to get into like a practice or two, because I think the book is structured in such a way that each chapter ends with a practice. And gosh, we really need embodied ways of hacking into this stuff. We really do. Mm-hmm. Maybe as a way into this question, like so many people I know who have stopped going to church have done so because they feel like they can't authentically show up as they are, where they are. And they have to sing like some kind of bypassing song about how great things are. And you give us this phrase of broken hallelujahs and offering broken hallelujahs to God. Will you talk about that a bit and how that can help those of us who feel like we can't show up authentically to church?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And thank you for that question, because I know for the listeners who are in that place, you're not alone, yeah. Right? You're not alone. And again, I just want to I want to offer. Let me start this way. Diane Langberg talks about how she works with trauma survivors. And she talks about how she'll hear so often, I'm just afraid if I let myself start crying, I'll never stop. This grief is just like an ocean wave that's going to knock me down and drag me under. And that fear is legitimate. And so can we just start by saying, there's a reality there that grief can absolutely be overwhelming. And so I think a starting point is to be gentle, to take it slow, to pay attention to, are you feeling overwhelmed? You can take a break. You can take a break and take a walk, or you can engage a breath prayer, which is just breathing in and kind of internally whispering a phrase and then breathing out. So it might be healer, breathing in, healer, breathing out, meet me here. It might be a name of God, breathing in, Yah, breathing out, way, that kind of thing. So starting with permission, permission to engage like we just talked about, but also permission to tap out and take a break, including from church for a time. You know, some people may need to have a time of healing before they reengage. And then that piece of broken hallelujah, Sung Chan Ra in Prophetic Lament talks. It's a study of the Book of Lamentations and relating it to the modern urban church, and he talks about how Lamentations is an example of a lament song that ends in a minor key. It doesn't resolve to praise. There's praise in the Book of Lamentation, but it's not how the book ends. The book ends saying, "Have you forgotten us, God? I don't know." And so finding places like that and owning them ourselves, like we get to say, "God, have you forgotten us? Is this the way it is?" And call that prayer, right? Let that be prayer, rather than, you know, this forcing to fast forward through grief and through questions that is not helpful. It's not honest, and it's not sustainable. It is destructive.
I wonder. This is total selfish for me. Okay. Because I could take you out to coffee. I feel like we could talk for like hours about this. But I think sometimes our listeners and me, myself, I think we think, oh, if there's a death, if there was a massive loss in our life, if there was a divorce, like then I have a lot of grief and then I need to express that and get that out. But the reality is, I find I meet with a counselor. My counselor, I remember the first time she suggested, like, I want you to put in your calendar a grief time, a lament time. Yes. And I scheduled it in and I was like, what is this going to look like? I don't understand. And she was like, listen to sad music if you need to, like for you to be able to like journal it out or start crying or whatever. Like, and I started that like 2 years ago. And now it's interesting to me, like there isn't some catastrophe going on. There isn't some massive thing. But I find that the rhythm, the need for that every so often is needed. Like there are things to lament and they're not like massive big things, but they pile up. And so can you just speak to that for just a second about the rhythm of practicing lament, practicing getting out, like having the grief come out in healthy, good ways and a rhythm of that. And maybe you can even share, I know you said breath prayer, but maybe share a practice or two for our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I love that your therapist encouraged you to schedule time for grief. I have a dear friend who lost her son in an accident and her therapist gave her that same advice. And she told me what she noticed was how healthy it was, how unexpectedly healthy and healing. And when some job commitments prevented her from keeping that rhythm, it hurt her. You know, she needed to return to that. She needed to incorporate that time. It's what her body and soul needed was room, dedicated room for grief.
Yeah, because otherwise it comes out sideways.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? That's right. Yeah. That's right. And can I just say, like, everyone who is listening to this podcast, everyone who is in this room right now looking at each other on our screens has experienced complex grief. We have lived through the pandemic together. We have lived through the racial and political division. We've lived through Me Too. We've lived through Church Too. I could go on. I'll pause there to say we've all experienced that, including the children among us, by the way. And, you know, each of us has our own story of loss. And I think the other thing, Christy, that you speak to so helpfully is there's this idea that, okay, if you've lost a loved one, okay, you can grieve. That counts. Or if you've had something like a house fire, or if you found out your partner, you know, is having an affair, okay, those count. You have permission to grieve. But What about the hidden things? What about people who struggle with infertility? What about those who have lived through miscarriage? What about beloved family members who are experiencing, you know, mental health crises, which, by the way, are statistically on the rise in alarming ways? What about even the secondary grief of opening up our phones and reading the headlines every day? All of those things are sources of legitimate grief. And they are things that oftentimes we don't consider, you know, we don't consider significant, and are often even actively told, oh, you shouldn't worry about that. That's not yours to worry about, or it's not important enough. You know, just trust and believe. No, they matter, and there's a cumulative effect as well. The other thing I might say, and then I'll definitely talk about a few practices, a few practical possibilities, is you know, when there is either a complex or a significant loss, like the loss of a family member, even the complexity around adoption, which is both redemptive and a loss all together, right? So honoring anniversaries and honoring, you know, that this is something that's like, and you use the word grief, it's like a ghost, you know, that honoring the fact that that some losses, maybe all of them, are with us. And that doesn't have to be, a sentence or a punishment. It can simply be, this happened and, you know, a dream died. Love and goodness that was in the world isn't anymore in the same way. And permission to honor that, including on anniversaries. And so, I have years ago, I've started the practice of when, you know, when it's someone's last day, I put that in my calendar because, you know, the body keeps the score, right? Bessel van der Kolk, you know, that our bodies know when those anniversaries are coming around, and we may be like, what, you know, what, why is it always in the fall? I end up getting sick and, you know, this or that, you know, so I've started, putting those anniversaries in, and sometimes it's just a moment to have a simple prayer. And by the way, I've been doing this for probably a decade. My calendar is more and more full as the years pass. Right. And it's a way to say, to honor the love, you know, either of that person or that community or whatever the specifics is, and the absence, you know, is to honor both. So I might light a candle. I might say a simple prayer. I might take a walk with God and just remember, what was lost. So that's a possibility. Other practices that you might try engaging. I often encourage people to start with breath prayers, like I mentioned, because that is a way, that's something that's so easy to do. You can do it, you know, while you're folding clothes, while you're taking a walk, while you're sitting and focusing on it. And what I like about it is, one of the things that grief does is it kind of takes our breath away, right? It makes language hard, and I found early in my grief that I didn't have words to talk to God, and I didn't really want to talk to God. And so I didn't have that tool back then. I came to it later, but a breath prayer is a way to sometimes, you know, it's a way to pray beyond words in a sense by using your very breath. And without feeling this responsibility to come up with these long discursive prayers when you're exhausted and overwhelmed. Another practice that I love is tearing. We see that showing up all through scripture and even beyond, right? You know, kind of the rending of garments. And Job did that. Tamar, you know, when she was assaulted, that's what she did. She tore her robe and cried aloud. And what tearing does is it allows that internal experience of loss, of trauma, of overwhelm to be externalized. And again, Ben, as you surfaced, it's a way of letting that become clean pain instead of dirty pain, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm not suggesting that we, you know, sort of start ripping up our clothes necessarily, although you might, right? And you're in good company if you do. But you know, you might tear an old t-shirt or an old cleaning rag, or you might get some, gather up some junk mail or old notes and tear paper. This is something that that you can engage with children really effectively as well. You know, helping children kind of tell the story of their sadness or their questions or their mad with their hands, and even letting, you know, asking God to be a part of that conversation. What I find, I've been leading people for probably a decade now in kind of workshops and things, engaging lament practices like this. And that visceral experience of tearing, particularly if you do it in a small group, you hear the sounds of it, and it surfaces grief in this really tangible, powerful way. And what I hear really frequently is two things. You know, I went into this practice, I entered this practice expecting to feel sad, and I did, but I also recognized I was really angry. Because anger is also, you know, so frequently connected with grief. You know, at the injustice, why did this have to happen? You know, at these hard, unanswered questions. And so to have the experience of noticing that reality in this really embodied way, and simultaneously of recognizing it can be welcome in community, and it can be welcome in the spirit of God's presence, is profoundly true. There's an inner knowing when people engage it that, oh, this is right. God is here and this is okay. And it's even welcome. The other thing I hear really frequently is I entered thinking about this one loss, and as I tore, all these other losses started coming to mind, because you know, our griefs get connected in our hearts and souls. And so it's this idea, Christy, as you said, to make room to attend to it and to give it time and space to come into the light. And it does. It does in really powerful, helpful ways.
And now a word from a sponsor. All right, let's get back into our conversation.
Looking at this stuff for a long time, but I'd never heard of that tearing as a practice. You know, I know, you know, I've read the Bible enough to know that this is a, you know, an ancient expression of grief. But I never thought to even, you know, try it, you know, as something that could be a powerful sort of embodied way of expressing this pain. I find that fascinating.
And my encouragement is try it. and right, see what you notice. Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's easy enough to just try it. Yeah. I mean, maybe there's a few questions here that I'd love to ask. But I think you just saying like, maybe just try it, leads me to one of the questions that I want to ask is it, we, you know, anybody who's looked at this for, you know, more than a couple minutes can see that, okay, lament is faithful and lament is, and is healing. It's like what I need to do with my grief is to lament it. Why do you think, Tara, even though we can know this, like with our heads as a fact that is true in the world, what is the resistance that we feel in our bodies to actually, you know, like Christy was saying, like schedule the time to grieve or, you know, find an old rag and try to tear it in half. Like what's like, I, even as I think about that, I feel this like, oh, that would be silly or that wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like I feel it in my body. I feel this resistance. I wonder why that is. I mean, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked that. I think there are a couple of kind of layered parts of that resistance. And I'll name them in no particular order. One is this received message. It's not in our heads. It's not our imagination. You know, we've been told, you know, big boys and girls don't cry, you know, stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about. You know, these messages are just in, you know, they're in the air around us. And in our churches, they're often, you know, paired with God language. And so like, so we've received this message that God doesn't want your grief. God wants your praise. If you're faithful, you're going to be giving thanks. You're going to be, you know, giving to others, all these things. So that's one piece. We've internalized those messages, those very, you know, clear, direct messages, overt messages. The other is that grief is hard. It's heavy lifting. Right. And so there is a, we would rather feel good than sad, you know, all things considered most of the time. And so, you know, so acknowledging and honoring it's difficult. And that's, you know, part of the resistance. And then the last, you said it, you know, the idea of, you know, taking a rag and trying to tear it feels like inauthentic or performative or silly. It feels very undignified, doesn't it? Or childish perhaps. And again, I'll use that word again, performative. That was my perspective when I would read. So I talk in the book about the story of Jesus raising Jairus's daughter from the dead and the professional wailers that were outside the house and, you know, how I, you know, they felt so inauthentic, not understanding, you know, kind of the role they had in that culture. And the reality is, you know, particularly with that last piece, I think there's some kind of truth telling to ourselves that we can do about all of those layers. But about that, oh, this feels silly or inauthentic piece, is, you know, just to tell the truth to ourselves that it may feel silly. It may feel performative. And maybe we need to try it anyway, because it's what our bodies and souls need. And it's what the generations before engaged much more helpfully than we did. You know, we've kind of suppressed some of those practices. And I think our invitation and it's urgent in this time is to return to those, to say, actually, we threw those in the trash can. We need to pull them back out. We need them.
Yeah.
More than we realized we did.
Yeah. So, yeah. Tara, there's so much more here in this book, including, I mentioned those practices at the end of the chapter, and there's practices for adults and there's practices for kids with adults. And so we don't have time to talk about this, but you talk in your book how grief hits kids different. And I'm just so grateful. Sometimes I'm parenting, which is which is dealing, right? And all my good intentions are bumping up against my incompetency and lack of experience. And so I just deeply appreciate you offering practices that we can do with our kids. And how do we become mothers and fathers of grief and lament for our kids? So we don't have time to go into that, but I just wanted to thank you for that part of your book, because it's immeasurably helpful. So we've spent most of our time talking about lament, but your book is really also about hope. It's right there in the title. And one of the, I think, things we need to be reminded of is that there's a difference between despair and lament. And could you, maybe as a sort of benediction of sorts for us, what have you learned about hope in the Christian life that you could share with us as maybe good news?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'd start by saying when I finally stopped and sort of faced down the reality that this brokenness is not something I can solve or resolve by all of the hard work I was trying to do to clean it up and fix it. When I stopped and realized I could not solve my grief, that there was no way around it. I had to live with it and go through it. It's strange to say, but that was the moment for me that hope started to come back, because all of my hard work was leading me toward despair because it wasn't resolving things. And so having a sense of I cannot do anything other than lament, and this dawned over time for me, and it may be different for different people. So I'm certain it will be. But this dawning over time of God is actually still with me. It felt like God left me. Felt like God left me. And actually, you know, that in that sort of still small voice experience, when I quieted down and when I got more still and when I let the grief come, that is when I was met, you know, by a loving shepherd, and began to get to know that God again, and become reacquainted, and to recognize in my own soul, and as I returned to some of the stories of the life of Jesus in particular, that God doesn't just welcome me when I'm bright and shiny and working hard and doing all the right things. I'm welcome as I am, you know, in my need. That was such good news. That is such good news. And my encouragement for anyone who is listening and feeling tempted to despair, or you may be in despair, is to know that hope can be found again, and it doesn't have to be forced. And it doesn't have to be rushed. There is time, you know, in God's extravagance, in God's economy, there is time. And to let hope dawn, to let it dawn over time.
Yeah. The book again is called Hopeful Lament, Tending Our Grief Through Spiritual Practices. Tara, I mentioned your spiritual direction ministry at the beginning. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and where people could connect with you or find you online if they wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I came to spiritual direction through these experiences that I talk about in the book, and found it to be exactly the thing I needed that I didn't have language for, you know, in the traditions that I had been a part of. Hmm. And spiritual direction is, it's an ancient practice. It's also sometimes referred to as soul companionship or holy listening. And the idea is, a spiritual director, someone like myself, listens with another person for the movements of their soul, for their sense of invitation, for what they need more of, what they need less of, where God is wanting to meet them. And the idea is that, you know, unlike therapy, unlike, you know, sitting in church and listening to preaching, it's a way to listen to and tune into kind of the image of God that's in each person and that their own wisdom and discernment and kind of hone that. Mm. Yeah. And it's one of those things that I feel it's a holy honor. It's sacred work to sit with people and hear them uncover, you know, the holy in themselves and their own and develop their own, you know, their wisdom and insight and abilities to hear the voice of the Spirit.
Yeah.
And so that's what spiritual direction is. And folks can find me online. The best way is my website. It has all my other links on it. And that is simply TaraMcDaniel.com. And Tara is spelled T-E-R-R-A, like terracotta. That's the best way to connect
Great.
With me.
Tara, thanks so much for being our guest today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Christy, you shared in that interview that you have started scheduling in grief so that you'll do it. And I wonder if you could share a bit more. How often do you schedule it in? And what does that look like? And how long does it last, et cetera?
Yeah. Yeah. It started out where I had no idea how long I was going to need, you know? And so now, like I said, there's not like a large catastrophe going on in my life, but I find that rhythms, things happen, things kind of pile up. And then if I don't schedule it out, it starts coming out sideways. So and this is different for every person, but I kind of schedule it out every like 10 to 14 days where I put it in my calendar. And now I just have like 20 to 30 minutes. It doesn't have to be long. And I just schedule it out. And sometimes I know exactly what I'm lamenting. Like just recently I realized like one of my sons is going to graduate high school in a year and I only have one more year. And somehow that was just causing a lot of sadness and a lot of grief and a lot of like, And so sometimes it looks like journaling. Sometimes it looks like literally laying on the ground and crying. Sometimes it looks like listening to my last one I just did. I was just thinking about Soren graduating and there's a country song called My Little Man. And I'm telling you, listen, if you're a mama and you got a son, I can't listen to that song without crying. And I just listened to the song and I just thought about all the things I love about Soren and then what it's going to be like when he goes off to college and just kind of grieving that time is limited. And so anyway, it looks different probably for different people, but it also looks different for me just in whatever the season and whatever the thing is. So I don't know if that helps, but I find that if I don't do it, it does come out sideways. There are times when I'm like, oh, I don't really need it right now, right? Maybe like 14 days goes by and I'm okay. But then maybe like something will happen and I'll start crying and I'll be like, what is this from? You know? Yeah. I'm like, oh, maybe I haven't created some space for that.
So. I had a lunch today with two people who are agitating for justice for two black men who are serving like 100-year sentences in an Indiana state prison. And I think we're going to have them on the podcast. Surprise. just to bring some awareness to this. But I found myself talking about some injustice related in our community with people in our church. And I found myself crying in a public coffee shop. And I simultaneously felt really embarrassed that I was crying. But also really grateful because it's hard for me to cry. It's hard for me to cry. And the things I was saying were sad things. So, you know, I think it's important that we let our bodies tell the truth.
Yeah.
You know,
what's interesting is that yesterday was an anniversary, a grief anniversary for me. And she was talking about that, like on the podcast. And I was like, oh my word, no wonder I have like a knot in my shoulder. And I was so impatient with my kids yesterday and I was grumpy. And the whole idea of the body keeps the score. And like, I was like, it was yesterday. It was the anniversary. And I didn't plan out any way to actually grieve or lament. And I actually had forgotten, but my body had not forgotten. And I thought it was just eye-opening to me. I was like, when I'm done this podcast, I'm getting off and I'm going to like create some space because it's important. It's really important.
Yeah. Well, that whole thing was great. I just loved Tara and the way she cared for us.
Yeah.
Well, one final thing, Christy. What do you get?
I'm like, I know what's happening. I have gotten smarter over the years, Matt.
Have you?
Yep.
Was it the 6 second pause?
Me looking at the corner of my eye, looking at you. Like, does he have a smug face on his? Like, is he smiling in a funny way? What do you have to say to me, Matt?
Well, I just was curious if you knew why. I wanted to ask you if you knew why Beethoven at one time got rid of all his chickens.
Why did Beethoven get rid of all his chickens, Matt?
Because all they kept saying was bark, 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 bark.
That's a good one. Especially since I just had 6 chickens hatch in my house in the last week. So, you know, that's my life. But really? I'm going to tell my kids that today.
Oh, that's a good one. I wonder if they'll know who Beethoven and Bach are.
They will. Come on. All right, friends.
All right. Everybody.
Good to be here.
Until next week.
Peace, friends.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. Also, Ben and I hang out there a lot. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. And we'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.